This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Billy the Bee Grant, Dave Laney Lane, and Liberal Nick Carthew from the Besotted Podcast. Gents, how are you?
Evening, yeah. We're all right, actually, yeah. Bit of a light drizzle out there this evening. And luckily we've got overcoats, so we're not wet.
And you didn't throw them at anyone, a la Mesut Ozil?
No.
Still got them on?
Nothing chucks.
Well, I mean, I took mine off to come inside here, you know. I don't wear my coat inside. Some people wear their coats inside, don't they?
I believe they do. I don't personally have a problem with it, but...
I'm sorry I took mine off. Sorry. I'll put it back on if you want me to, you know.
Yeah. Laney stuck with it. I think it looks good. And talking of...
Silver tongue.
Oh, there's so much more to come, Laney. Don't you worry. Talking of positive things, the Brentford B team is playing in the London Cup final versus Welling at Wingate.
Not the cup final. You've got to put your...
The only cup final. Biggest cup final of all.
Well, the biggest cup final on Tuesday anyway.
In Wingate.
Yeah. So it's Brentford B are playing Welling in the London Cup final. One of two cup finals that they're in, actually. And it's in Wingate and Finchley. And it's quite funny because my wife's gone away this week. So I'm basically home alone. She's taking the kids and she's taking everyone. And so basically this is the week where I could actually go anywhere in the world or anywhere in the country, you know, actually have a fun day. And they happen to be playing literally about 2 minutes from my house. So
so hang on, Billy. When offered the possibility to go literally anywhere in the world, you've chosen Brentford B in the London Cup final.
Well, they started off being here tonight.
It's commitment to the cause, both of the show and the club.
That's right. You know, that's the way it goes. You know, again, you could tell I'm one of these people that you must not take down the casino. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'll roll the dice. And they have dice at casino, don't they? Yeah. And you expect it to come in red and it will definitely come in black with me. But anyway... You know.
We move on quick.
In terms of the game itself and the Brentford B side, how good are they? And are there players in that current roster who you expect to see in the first team in coming seasons?
I'd say yes. I would very much like to think so. I think we've had 12 players come out of the Brentford B team and gone into the first team so far, which is actually really good. We had a couple. Well, we had one play definitely on Saturday. We had Mad Beck Sorensen as well. So he's played a few games for the B team. We had Josh De Silva who played as well. I don't know if he played on Saturday, played the game beforehand as well. So we've had quite a few players that come out. Obviously, the most famous one that's come out of the B team through the B team is Chris Meppham, who came out of the B team, played about 30 games, and then we sold him to Bournemouth for £15 million, which was, it was good business, but also it's quite gutting because you didn't actually even really get to sort of hug him because, you know, by the time he actually sort of got quite good, you know, you're watching him on the screen sort of kind of getting...
Well, you can drive... You've got three nights now. You can drive down to Bournemouth and give him a hug if you want.
That's right, actually. That's
all the most glamorous destinations.
That's where I'm going to be going tomorrow instead of going down to Wingate and Finchley, down to Bournemouth to hug Meppham.
It's actually quite important, these two cup finals, because the B team do play sort of arranged other B team games or against academy or under 23 teams, they don't often play men's football, and these sort of semi-pro teams, the non-league teams, they offer them a different challenge to what they're getting. They're not getting academy highly technical necessarily competition. They are getting they're getting very, very like for like tests in their fixtures, but now they're up against kind of warts and all kind of, you know, players that will give you a kick, you know. So I think it's really good. It's a really good experience for them.
Definitely really good experience. I mean, I saw them last time they played at Wingate and Finchley. They actually played Wingate a few weeks ago or a few months ago. And Wingate put out their first team because the London Senior Cup is actually quite important for non-league teams. So they put their first team out and it was a proper battle. And as we say, you know, I mean, sometimes Brentford do play teams who mix and match between playing under 23s and playing, you know, first team regulars. You know, when we went down to see them, Brentford play QPR that time, there was a mixture between sort of under 23 players for QPR, plus they had Silla and a number of first teamers in there as well. So it provides a real test for Brentford. So going to this, you know, games like this, like I said to you, are really, you know, they are really important. Like I said to you, we went to Dundalk last season. And it was a pre-season friendly for them. And we just thought, you know, normally pre-season friendly is a little bit of a walk in the park. But this was it was like a cup final. And the fans were so potty for it. It's like, you know, yeah, you know, they were singing and cheering and chanting at us and pointing at us and everything like that. Because, you know, they scored goals against us. So we're thinking, oh, this is pre-season friendly. But it was actually more blood and thunder. So it's really good that they do that. And like I said to you, hopefully, I think there's a couple of players that they're expecting to come out of there, well, quite a lot, but Canson is one of them as well. And I think is it Zambrick?
Yeah.
There's a few players that they're expecting will actually pop their head.
And there's a chance that we'll be playing Man City. They're under 23s at Griffin Park, possibly at the end of the season. Depends on Man City's fixtures in a couple of competitions, but there's a chance that'll happen. So that'd be a decent freebie.
But look at the last three games that Brentford B played. They played against Notre Dame's men's soccer team, the American University. Lost that one 1-0. They then did a European jaunt, and that's the thing about the Brentford B team is, you know, they go round the world, or certainly round Europe playing teams. They lost 2-0 to Nice reserves on Tuesday last week, and then Thursday last week they bounced back by beating Genoa. B team 6-1.
Smashed them to pieces. The Genovese weren't happy about that at all. You know, they're all rioting and looting all over the place. I'm lying, actually.
It's a beautiful place, Genoa, so I hope that at least they didn't get... at least they could have enjoyed their Parmesan while after the game. But, you know, to go from that to playing Welling United, I mean, with no disrespect to Welling United, if you play Genoa and Nice in your last two games and then you're in Wingate and Finchley, and no disrespect to your locality, Bill. But,
you are taking a step down in terms of cuisine, aren't
exactly. Well, definitely a step down in terms of cuisine. Are you going to be ready and are you going to be up for the game? It is. Can you perform on a cold, wet night in Wingate and Finchley?
It's like a random fixture, like a computer that was chucked in. You could end up with Welling or Juventus. It's kind of, you know, they're really all over the place, aren't they, these fixtures?
But that's presumably good preparation for these guys who could be able to make the step up to the first team. And for them, it was interesting, Dave, you were talking about this kind of game against the semi-pro sides being real, you know, a real battle. You're going to get kicked. How important is that kind of game where you do get knocked about a bit in terms of preparing you for a really competitive league like the Championship?
Yeah, it is important. And to play in front of a crowd, whether, you know, they're not going to play in front of more than a couple of hundred people on the training pitches that they play most of these fixtures on. So to play at Griffin Park, where there's been a fair decent turnout, it's probably been 400 or 500 for quite a few of their games, and sometimes a little bit more.
It's about over 1,000 for the Man United game, I think it was.
Yeah,
it's
over 1,000 for that. So I would imagine there'll be sort of elite, high hundreds, if not low thousand for the cup final matches, the one at Griffin Park especially. So yeah, a bit of an atmosphere and a bit of kind of like banter as well. So it is important.
And are we expecting a good result for Brentford B is the big question.
Well, I've got to be honest with you, I have no idea because it's difficult because you're playing, you know, Welling. Welling are in the, I think they're in the, I think they might be in the, might be in the Isthmian Premier, I think that they may be, which is one league below. Again, they played Dulwich Hamlet in a previous round, and they beat them. So you would have said probably in principle, if they're in the league below them, then they should beat them. But again, that Hamlet game was a tough game for the Bees. And Welling, and I know Welling and Dulwich go toe-to-toe, you know, at times as well. So, you know, one could win one time, another can win the other time. So you never know. But I would like to... It's a bit of a weird one because you're almost like in a bit of two minds because, you know, there's a few of the non-league fans who are going, oh, no, our cup has been devalued because we've got Brentford B in it, you know what I'm saying? And you can kind of understand where they're saying from that, you know, that they're used to having it pure... spread where you've got, you know, Hayes and, you know, Harlington and, you know, Hayes and Dulwich and all these teams play, and all of a sudden Brentford B come in. You know, it's a team of Premier League players who can't quite get in. Probably quite similar to what's happening with the Checkatrade Trophy with, you know,
the
under-23 team. So you can understand from that. Now, what is interesting, what Brentford did, obviously, when we played Dulwich in the last round, even though it was meant to be played at Griffin Park, we immediately switched it to their ground and we decided to give them all the money. And that was like, Dulwich went, that's fantastic, that's really brilliant. And I think that was a real gesture there as well. Now we've got the final, which is happening at Wingate and Finchley. And, you know, I don't know, in two ways, yes, I'd love them to win. But in another way, I just kind of want, the most important thing is they put on a decent performance and you see two or three players out there, you think, he's half decent. That's the most important thing for me.
Well, it's a big challenge for Brentford B and we can only hope for a good result. And it was a big challenge for the first team. Sorry.
It was. And just to let people know, 7:45 kickoff, Wingate and Finchley Football Club, which is, well, Summers Lane is where it is. It's actually not the street, but if you just look for Summers Lane in Finchley, N12 as well, which is just off the A406, just up from there, you can get there. It's probably a half an hour's drive from Brentford as well. So go down there, support the B team. Yeah, nice little bar, really friendly in the bar, actually, at Wingate and Finchley, which is very important.
It's important,
you know.
Billy, who is our resident expert in all footballing bars, you've got a positive review there, so yes. It must be fun. For the first team, it was, of course, a tough one, but a good, good game against Derby at the weekend. Drew 3-3, and coming up, we'll be hearing from both Brentford and Derby fans from the pub after the game.
This is Love Sport.
It was the best game of football seen at Griffin Park this season, definitely. Fantastic, you know, fantastic advert for Championship football. I'm glad Brentford hang in there. I reckon if Brentford had gone and managed to get a goal, managed to get the lead, we probably could have won that game. Above all, Derby absolutely scrapping it out. I was disappointed in the fact that... you know, there perhaps was a bit of play acting went on from the Derby players. But apart from that, no, one can't fault it. Fantastic game of football. Roll on the rest of the season. And what's really made me pleased is it shows that Brentford haven't given up.
Yeah, I thought the ref was rubbish today. I thought he was pony. And it's good to be saying that from a position of not losing a game and sounding bitter. But the quality of refs continues to baffle me. But it was a fantastic game of football. You know, against a good team, a lot of experienced players. I looked at Derby's subs bench, they all looked like they were at least twice as old as most of our kids.
I think they were.
And they probably were, and that's their style, and good luck to them. I thought coming back three times showed lots of character. It was enjoyable. We've got nothing left to play for this season other than a bit of fun, maybe to scrub lead season or, you know, anybody else's. But, you know, credit to the manager and the team. Good substitutions, you know, good goals, good attitude, good game.
I do think if we'd have got our noses ahead in the second half, we would have... You know, I think we would have seen it home just about. I think De Silva for Mococho, I mean, that didn't strengthen us by any stretch of the imagination. Although I thought De Silva was all right today, and actually I think what I saw today was that he's actually more of an obvious replacement for Sawyers in that two-man midfield than Mococho. I think Rico was probably just not quite match fit. He had a reasonable game, but there was a lot going on down his side, and every now and then he was getting caught out.
It's so tight up at the top. There's so many teams involved. We need to keep winning. Of course, take a point away from home, as you said, but I thought we played well today. Our defence let us down again. Really impressed with Brentford, actually, the way that you play from the back. As you mentioned earlier, like we pressed you and pressed you. You played through us. Like, you know how to play. And when you press us, we can't play out from the back. And that's been our struggle. We're still learning that way to play. You guys have been playing that way for, what, 3-4 years probably now. And your players are comfortable playing out. They know how to make space. What Liberal Nick was saying about you guys turning up and really playing for it. Please keep doing that. Please keep turning up, playing and battling like you did today. Because you guys gave us a real game. And we hope you do that to Leeds and the rest of the top six you're playing this season.
Fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I thought Brentford played really well. I thought we played really well. Just really disappointed to have given the lead away three times in a game. Since Bradley Johnson came back into the side, we've just got that bit more aggression. And it's been good to see. I don't think it was particularly dirty on either side. But yeah, I for one have been pleased to see that extra edge in the game from us.
Well, London Irish arrived early, didn't they? It was a bit of a rugby game today. No, it was a thriller. And we were saying, oddly satisfying for a game that we were never ahead in. And it shows that at home we can go toe-to-toe with anyone in the division, that as well Moneyball defeats ageing legends. You know, I would have liked to have seen a bit more of the youngsters coming in, but you know, you don't want Balcom starting and then conceding four or five like Bonham. A Tim Pot club knocking a big club out of the playoffs. I'm a bit worried we might not get back to our sacred 10th place.
Wonderful to hear from both Brentford and Derby fans in the pub there after the game. A wonderful feature of the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And I was interested by one thing that a Derby fan said there, which is that he didn't think it was particularly dirty from either side. Do you guys subscribe to that view?
No. It was they came out of the traps with a very desperate mindset. It was obviously a very critical game for them. You know, they're sniffing at the playoffs. Frank Lampard's first season in control there, he expects to achieve something. He's got a lot of pressure on his shoulders, I would imagine. And they were chasing every ball and kicking and fouling, and I can't even use the word what they were doing, but housery is the word.
A certain kind of housery.
Shed housery. And they were prolific at it, and you know, I was very surprised that the game ended with a full complement of players. I expected someone to be sent off, probably from wearing my Brentford hat from their side, but it did get a bit niggly.
It did get niggly, and also we forget this until, you know, when they were talking there today, Mococho got poleaxed as well. He got completely and utterly poleaxed. Then I didn't remember, and he obviously got substituted off for Josh De Silva. And it's interesting that as well, because as we talked about so many times, Mococho is so crucial to our game, and I think that made us a little bit nervous, because when Mococho didn't play against Swansea, mm-hmm. I think he didn't play against Swansea, and Josh De Silva played against Swansea, and he had an all right game, but you could see that, you know, was it him that didn't play? Was it Sawyers? No, it's Sawyers that didn't play, and I think Josh De Silva came in, and you noticed that sort of creativity wasn't quite there, so a little bit nervous. But I think Josh De Silva actually did all right against Derby, and obviously he must have done all right, because we kept coming back and scoring goals to get them.
I took a bit of flack on social media after my comments went up, you know, about talking about it was one of the best games that I've seen this season. By best game, I don't mean that it was quality. I mean, it wasn't, you know, there wasn't that much football on display. But it was a competitive game, and for all-round entertainment, the crowd were up for it. There was a vocal crowd, six goals. Players were winding each other up. There was a bit of shenanigans going on with
That's
managers.
That's the alternative to housery, I believe.
Well, exactly, yeah. Shenanigans, yeah, I like that word. You know, and it was our biggest crowd of the season. And if you were a neutral, or if you had decided, let's try and go down to Griffin Park and see what it's all about, you would have probably gone away from that game and thought, yeah, I've seen a really, really good game of football. It was what Championship football is about, and why the Championship is the best league that there is in Europe.
I thought that Brentford showed real character in the fact that 4 or 5 years ago, we wouldn't have got anything out of that game. They came and they played. They made their tricks. They used their professional know-how to waste time, to buy tackles, you know, to win free kicks rather. They left their foot in once or twice. They went a goal up, and there's so many
very
games,
early.
So, yeah, very early, and there's so many games throughout history I've seen that we don't come back from that. We end up coming away seething and frustrated, and we come back three times and we didn't look out of our depth, and we didn't look phased or panicky. You know, each time we went behind, they just thought, right, okay, we're going to go up the other end and score, and they did. And then three good goals as well.
Full credit to Thomas Frank. He outmanaged Frank Lampard in that game, I reckon. I mean, I think Thomas Frank has got more experience all round of being a manager than Frank Lampard has, but Frank Lampard is reckoned to be the brightest new thing. Again, you know, if you come down to Griffin Park to have a look at Frank Lampard and see whether he could be the next Chelsea manager or what have you, your eyes might have been more drawn towards seeing whether Thomas Frank might be, you know, the next Premiership manager, because he did so well in that regard. The team really, really battled for it, and as Dave said, you know, they didn't give up, and there are too many times this season that I've been concerned, particularly in the last couple of games last month or so is that perhaps the players have decided, well, we're not going to get anything out of the rest of this season. We might put on the proverbial beach, as it were. And just, absolutely no evidence of that on Saturday.
And just a quick point, as we always like to point towards our statties, we haven't got XG Dave here today, so but we'll just point out just quickly from an XG point of view from that game creating chances. Brentford are so, to be quite honest with you, 1.17 for Brentford and 1.49 for Derby. So they were creating better chances than us. But it looks like that we were converting everything that was put in front of us. So it's a sort of slightly different game where Brentford sometimes has a high XG and doesn't score any goals. This time, actually, we scored three goals. And our XG was kind of like in the sort of OK area. But also what's interesting, we've been monitoring this since January as well. Derby County have always been up in the playoffs. They've been sixth place. But on the XG, on the expected goals table, they've been 18th. They've been kind of like, basically, they've been punching. They've moved up slightly up to 16 now, but all the signs are still saying that Derby are basically doing better than what their performances are saying. So if they do get in the playoffs, and I'm sort of thinking, I don't think they will do, but if they do get in the playoffs, the question mark's out as to whether or not they'll actually be able to get through. I don't think they will.
That to me sums up why I'm still don't remain to be convinced about XG. And, you know, I will have Thomas Frank and everybody at the Brentford management coming down on me for saying that. But, you know, football is a game where you just try and score more goals than the opponents. It doesn't matter whether you have one chance or 50 chances. As long as you score more goals and win the game, that to me is the XG factor in football. I'm a Luddite, you know.
But I think, you know, and again, we're not going to go too much, but the whole thing about it is that it basically means it's like, who's wasting chances? Who's kind of been lucky? You look at the XG table and the teams that are right at the top, Leeds United, Sheffield United, you know, West Brom, you know, the teams that are up the top are up there. So basically they're up there on merit. And then you get these other teams that are basically kind of chancing a little bit.
Tables don't lie.
Well, there is a question there. They could do. But if, like Derby, you're lucky on a really consistent basis, there might be some kind of method to that luck. I'm not sure.
Reading, two years ago, prime example, third place, the XG was 18th all the way through the season. Lucky. They got the playoffs. They didn't get it. The following season, they were floundering, almost got relegated.
They still have been floundering ever since, haven't they?
You know, they were punching massively.
Hopefully, they'll be floundering on Saturday.
All their luck happened within one season. The ball would hit the post, and instead of going wide, it'll go into the post, and it happened all the time when we played them, and we lost 4-3, I think it was, at their ground, or 3-2. Fantastic game, and I don't know how we lost that game, but basically I think all their chances that they shot, three shots, went in, and all our 25 that we had didn't.
I'll tell you why.
I think the telltale sign about Derby though is they look desperate. They looked a desperate team. They didn't look a quality team, I didn't think. They looked like they were scrapping for it. I don't think there's a lot of belief there that it's going to happen. If it is going to happen, they're going to have to literally crawl up that ladder.
Well, their owner has literally mortgaged their ground to make sure that they try to get into the Premiership this year, you know. And yes, it could fail.
So next year, if they don't do it, is going to be
interesting.
And that might prove Nick's point, or Billy might be vindicated. You're going to have to stay with us for a whole year to find out. You should stay with us for now, certainly, because coming up, Brentford launched a diversity event at the Novotel Hotel on Thursday. On Friday, they released a wonderful video about inclusion at the club. And then on Saturday, we got the sad news that a season ticket holder, has been arrested for allegedly chanting racist abuse at a Derby player. So where does the club come down on all of these things? We'll find out in just a moment.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And towards the end of last week, Brentford launched a campaign. They bought into Kick It Out's initiative to stand against racism in football, released a wonderful video citing the squad's 15 nationalities, the fact that players of all races, colours, creeds are welcome at the club. And there was also an event at a hotel, I believe, Billy.
That's right, at the Novotel Hotel. It's the Be Together campaign, which Brentford have launched. And basically what it is, that they've upped the ante with a campaign and a strategy to combat racism and prejudice, and more importantly, to broaden, and this is much more important, just to broaden the Brentford fan base. So basically what they're doing, they're looking out there and just thinking, tell you something, who wants to come to Brentford and how can we talk to you and how can we bring you on board and you can be part of this wonderful club? You know, so that's the main thing about it. So it's actually a very, very positive event. You know, I went down there, a number of other fans went down there as well, about 80, 90 people inside the room. On the panel was Marcus Gale, ex-Brentford player Marcus Gale, who we'll be talking to in just a minute. Salma Mahmoud as well, who is a Muslim Brentford player. She plays for Brentford. Liam Ferdinand, who is... not Liam Ferdinand. It's Leon Residia, who is Leroy Resenia's son. He actually commentates on the Sky EFL Goals show and on Sky, but also he is a coach in himself, and obviously his dad used to be Brentford manager, and he wrote a book called It's All About the Banter, about racism in football. Anwar Din, who's the FSF and Kick It Out diversity manager. Chris Barros, who's she does a lot of activism work within the football world. Romain Sawyers, Brentford captain as well. And Thomas Frank, Brentford head coach. So those people there on the panel, and it was a really good discussion, really positive evening. But let's have a little listen to this little piece that Brentford put out, which is actually a video, but we're just taking the audio from it, which is basically Brentford players talking about their thoughts and a vision for Brentford.
Many different nationalities, but we have the same culture, respect for each other.
There's no place for racism or discrimination of any kind in football.
Our strength is our unity.
La langue n'est pas un problème quand tu partages les mêmes ambitions.
Vengamos de donde vengamos, todos hablamos el mismo idioma. Brentford.
Football is about performance. Without diversity, we are all the same.
Football is our common language.
Brentford. 15 nationalities, one language. Football.
Brentford. 15 nationalités, un langage. Football.
Brentford. 15 nationalités, et sport. Football.
We play as a team, everyone equal, everyone together.
Den eneste farve, der betyder noget, er den farve, vi selv spiller i.
Language is no problem when you share the same goals.
Sproget er ikke et problem, når vi har de samme mål.
There is no such thing as discrimination in educated minds.
Many different nationalities, but we share the same culture. Respect each other.
Différentes nationalités, mais nous partageons la même culture. Le respect. Brentford.
Together we celebrate value difference.
Discrimination weakens us, diversity strengthens us.
We have come from far and wide, but we all speak the same language. Brentford.
A wonderful video there from Brentford with a wonderful and important message. Diversity strengthens us, which means the news that on Saturday a Brentford season ticket holder was arrested for allegedly chanting monkey noises at a Derby player makes that news all the more troubling. In just a moment, we will be joined on the line by Marcus Gale, who's an ex-Brentford player and a Kick It Out ambassador himself, for a chat about those allegations and how they tie into the campaign.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Marcus Gale, who's an ex-Brentford player and a Quality Inspires and Life Skills tutor for Kick It Out. Evening, Marcus. Thanks ever so much for joining us on the line. How disappointed are you about this news coming from the club at the weekend?
Yeah, quite disappointed, but also delighted with the response by the club, with issuing a statement and going through the procedures as they should in the correct manner. So a bit of both. It's a mixed feeling, but yeah, I think the right thing has been done. The process is in place, and now we just await to see what really happens.
I mean, Marcus, how are you doing? It's Billy, yeah?
Billy?
Yeah, man. So listen, I mean, I think we need to emphasise the point, yeah, very, very, very quickly here as well. I mean, obviously, situations come in place. I mean, we actually didn't even know anything had happened until we got back to the pub, I think it was, so we didn't know anything about it, hadn't seen anything about it. Everything that you see is flying around in the internet ether, the press ether, but people don't know. Somebody has been arrested, hasn't been charged, and from what I can gather, you know, decisions are being made. It is innocent until proven guilty, so I think we have to be very careful here, because we have a situation which is happening, and there's a process that's going through. So I think whatever has happened here, it's much better if we actually talk about what is happening at Brentford in general, because there's a lot of things that were happening at Brentford before this actual incident on Saturday. Yeah. And it's almost like this incident on Saturday is taken away from whatever may or may not be happening at Brentford. And I think this is very important to talk about that, because that's key, because that's going to go on much further than what happens with this incident in the future. Do you understand, Marcus? True. You know,
I totally understand that. I think, you know, that the event we had at Brentford last Thursday with Kick It Out was a really good experience for those that didn't really understand exactly what Kick It Out does and what we're about. But it's important for the fans to engage and have a platform where they can ask questions and try and get the right answers as well. So I thought that was a big success of the club, and it shows the club have got this at the forefront of their mind, is that football is for everybody, for all their fans, to come and enjoy. And I think that's the most important message that they've sent out there.
Marcus, can I ask, were you ever on the receiving end of racist abuse as a player?
Not as a player, no. I'll tell you what it is. It's we had an event with Kick Out a few weeks ago, and one of the players there, Carlton Cole, he summed it up just how I would have summed it up, and I will. You hear certain terminologies in and amongst your own, but it's not directed at you. It's directed at the opponents or the opposition. For me, it was like, I don't want to not have a career based on me challenging these guys when I'm 18, 19, 20, trying to establish myself in the game. I don't want to be looked upon as a troublemaker and a bad egg and be released and can't even get another club. And then my dream is over.
So Marcus, do you think if you'd stood up to racism as a younger player, you might not have had the career you had in the game?
Yeah, I believe so, because it was rife then. Bad news travelled extremely quick, and I didn't want to have that having an effect on me. So to a point, I blocked that out.
Marcus,
I never heard anything direct to me on the pitch itself, so I don't experience that at all.
It's interesting you say that, Marcus, because this is part of the forum, and this is what we talked about a lot of things on the forum, and one of the things that we talked about was basically the clubs being clubs being proactive. And I told I told a story about when I was younger and I used to get beaten. I used to get beaten black and blue by my own supporters at Brentford, run all over the place by my own supporters, and the club didn't back me when I asked them to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And nowadays, what's happened is, interestingly, recently we've had players who actually have put their head above the parapet and said, actually, that's wrong. Whereas in your day, that never used to happen, which is quite bad for black supporters, because you're going there and you're thinking, I'm not getting any backup from the clubs. I'm not getting any backup from the players. I'm not getting any backup for anything. Also, what was interesting is when Thomas Frank, the very first thing that he said, you remember what he said? He said, I would rather, if there was any racism on the pitch, I would rather remove my players off the pitch than be promoted to the Premier League. And that kind of got a gush of a real gush in from all the, everyone went, whoa, inside that. And to me, I was thinking, if somebody had said that to me when I was 16 years old, I would have been so proud, thinking, I want to back that club, and all my mates are going to come down there too. Do you think there's a big change now in what's happening with the youth then, with the players actually speaking out?
Most definitely. I would like to add to that, the advent of social media has definitely given the players the platform. They don't need the press to go and release anything. So when Raheem Sterling, after he played Chelsea, he didn't go to the press. He done that on social media. So that's what caused the sort of attention. Back in our day, there was no such thing as social media. If we had to, if the fans needed to know about us, they'll find out about us in the match day program or a newspaper. So who can we go to in the newspaper to say, well, this is happening? Who could you go to at the club and write in the program, well, this is happening? That's not really going to be printed. So the fact that social media is alive and kicking now, it's giving players the biggest opportunity to share their story and engage with the fans of what is really happening.
Hi, Marcus. It's Dave here.
Hi, Dave.
Hiya. So, I mean, obviously, it's a bit ironic that the two incidents have happened within sort of 48 hours of each other, pretty much. We've had this like really positive launch and the club directive and the evening at Novotel. And then 72 hours later on, or whatever, 42 hours later, we've got an incident that, you know, has kind of blown up and possibly could have undone, in a PR perspective, a lot of the good work. I mean, obviously, as Billy said, he's innocent until proven guilty, and the whole procedure will go through, and let's hope that it's a positive outcome for everyone. But, you know, do you feel that it's the timing of it has been bad, or is it kind of, does it heighten the discussion almost?
I think it heightens the discussion. It's got the club on its toes in terms of they're on point with all their procedures. Things are in place. This is a good test, and I think the club embraced that as well. and the fans need to join that as well. It's not trying to throw someone under a bus, but it's trying to establish the details, the facts, what was said, what was not said, and sift through all of that before ultimately a decision is made. Now, the ultimate decision, well, the first decision won't be from the club, will it? It'll be from the police, from their investigation. And then the second will be by the club. So I think the club have gone out their way and put that statement out there to say, if found guilty, then that's the next process is, you know, looking to ban the individual.
Marcus,
it will be a positive thing as well. I know it's negative, but there will be positives that will come out of it as well. And, you know, we've got a good set of fans at Brentford that really get passionate behind the team. Saturday's game, when you look at the game, it was spicy. It had a lot of drama, had a lot of antagonism by both sets of players to a degree. And it made for a great atmosphere for everyone to watch.
Marcus, it's Liberal Nick. You've probably been listening to some of the comments that I made on the podcast by the sounds of that, but the way you summarised the game. But what more do you think the club should now do? You're right, it was great that the club issued that statement. Immediately, they were made aware of what the situation was. Yeah. Is there anything else the club could do in the next week, within the provisos, of course, is that we still wait for the CPS to lay charges. Is there anything more you'd like to see the club doing and working with supporters to make sure that we can stamp out racism?
I think the club are working with the right relevant bodies, trying to get information. They've even offered myself personally to help, even if this fan, you know, was to be found guilty or not. I would personally sit and have a conversation with the person and try and understand from his perspective, and I can share from a footballing perspective of how it's wrong, and how it affects people, and is it needed in the game. So I think the club are doing the right things. They've had, you know, a couple forums in the recent past as well. So they're doing the right things. There's not much more that the club can do at this present time, apart from just be consistent with the message, which is that it's got zero tolerance for any form of racism or discrimination.
Yeah. Again, and just quickly, I'm just going to say this, Marcus, from what you promised there. Again, there mustn't be presumption that this person is guilty because you say must sit down and talk to him. I think this is a very important point to say here as well. Innocent until proven guilty. It's in the system now, and then I think we need to just kind of, you know, to chill out and move on and see what happens from there. Johnny, I think you've got something to say.
Yeah.
Marcus, I was having a chat with Charlton striker Lyle Taylor on the Charlton show last week, and Lyle was on the receiving end of racist abuse on Twitter after they beat Bradford 1-0. He was just sent a sequence of banana emojis, and he was discussing what he would do if he received racist abuse on the pitch. He said he would walk off straight away. Having none of it, he would walk off. And then we've seen Raheem Sterling today, who has himself been repeatedly on the end of receiving racist abuse on the pitch, say, well, walking off, as far as he's concerned, isn't the solution. Raheem was saying the best thing to do is stay on the pitch, score a goal, beat them and make your point that way. If you were still playing as a player and, heaven forbid, you were exposed to chanting of this kind or abuse or whatever it may be, how would you respond? Would you walk off the pitch?
I'd be extremely angry and upset. What I would have done maybe at 18, I would have been probably too angry to make a proper decision at the time and probably take it out and lash out on someone. However, what I teach the players up and down the country is that you can't take it into your own hands. There's a protocol that we show the players to take, which is to go to the referee and make your complaint to him. We put a scenario, if the referee doesn't want to listen, who do you go to next? They say to the fourth official. I say, yeah, you can do that. Or go to who? Your coach. Your coach can go back to the fourth official, have a discussion and take it up with their coach, and then something can be done. There is a three-step process that should happen if it happens in a match. It's to stop the match by the referee. He will go over to the match day announcer to say, look, put an announcement that the game could be stopped if this sort of abuse keeps happening. And if it does keep happening, then the third bit is to probably take both teams off the pitch. So it's not a case of players trying to do it on their own because they can't, because the headline would be just about the player walking off the pitch and not about dealing with the actual chanting that's making that player walk off the pitch or giving him the choice to walk off the pitch.
To me, okay, Marcus, so, I mean, we've got a situation where Thursday I thought was very positive. The thing I thought was really good about Thursday is in that room, it wasn't like negativity, people saying, oh, this has happened, that's happened. Everyone was actually positive how they can move forward positively. Also, quite interestingly, you know, after the incident on Saturday, a lot of Brentford fans are almost like up in arms because they want to protect their club, saying, our club isn't like that. Our club's not like that. We want to prove to the world that our club isn't like that. To me, it's almost like this incident that's happened is almost like kind of taken away from the sort of kind of positive spin where, you know, we were looking at the club, I'd say, finally actually doing, putting a bit of action in, because most football clubs, they've been really lazy in this area. They've been so lazy. They just cross the I's and dot the T's. But it looked like they were actually going to do a number of positive things. And the question I'm asking is that, for me, the most important thing, because what's happened on Saturday, and like I said to you, I'm going to sort of blank that out to a certain extent, because it's kind of like Lampard said something, police has arrested, it's gone off under the corner. I'm more important into the creative strategies that the club are putting into place so that so fans, black fans, Asian fans, all sorts of fans feel comfortable in their club. They're willing to bring their friends down and they're willing to actually bring more people in there. That, to me, is the most important thing. One thing that was interesting is that, talking about a positive strategy, Sweden, you've got that Jimmy Dermaz situation. You remember that as well? The Jimmy Dermaz, where the guy in played for Sweden and he gave away a free kick to Germany and he got properly racially abused, the Swedish player. And but what happened is that his whole team and the whole country and the whole Swedish FA and everyone like that came out, did a video, and it was F racism. I mean, the word wasn't, it went out, went viral. But I thought that was brilliant, because what you've got is that you've got the whole FA, the whole of his team coming out. And to me, players talking is the key. Players need to talk.
Brentford had that on Thursday with that goosebump video that they've produced with all the first team, showing that there's 15 different nationalities, but it's one language, and that's Brentford. The love of playing for Brentford. That's what unites players and fans up and down the country, and that's what Brentford are leading in. They're leading in with this inclusive, diversive culture around the club, because the team is actually showing that. Is that it's going to have fans that are from 15 different nationalities sitting up in the crowd. You're going to attract fans from all different parts of the world, which is brilliant. That's what you want. And especially going into a new stadium, you want to attract as many new fans as possible, especially the local ones as well, which the club are working on as we speak. So for me, the club's in a good position and place to keep on implementing positivity around fan engagement, and they've got my full backing with it.
Marcus, that's a wonderful message, and it's been wonderful speaking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. That was Marcus Gale the former Brentford player and a quality inspires and life skills tutor for Kick It Out. Stay with us here on the Brentford Fan Show, because coming up, we will turn our attentions to Ipswich.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Besotted. A quick update from the Premier League action with 30 seconds left to play. It is Chelsea 2, West Ham 0. Eden Hazard adding his second of the night there. We're turning our attention to Brentford's upcoming clash with Ipswich Town, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ben Bloom from the Blue Monday podcast. Ben, thanks ever so much for joining us. Not been the best of seasons for the Tractor Boys.
That's an understatement, yeah. Everything that could possibly have gone wrong has gone wrong. But fortunately, we're kind of at peace with it now. It was a game against Reading probably 3 or 4 weeks ago where last-minute defeat, and it was kind of, OK, look, we're down now. And for once, hopefully, we get a long, organised pre-season and come back next year a little bit stronger than we have previously.
Ben, Billy here, mate. How are you?
Hey, Bill. Great to hear from you.
Yeah, and yourself, mate. Tell you something. We're going to make this easy for you, mate, because what we're going to do, I know there's been a lot of doom and gloom, but we're going to try and talk and bring it up a bit. Alan Judge. How has Alan Judge been for you guys?
Alan Judge has been great, and you probably know he's just signed a two-year deal with an option for a third year. And we just think it's really important to have a player who been sort of so good at championship level before the injury, commit himself to the club ahead of going into League One. And we hope that he can stay fit. And if he does, I'm sure he's going to have a great season at that lower level and really get back to
maybe not the player he was in 15, 16 for you guys, but somewhere near his potential now.
Don't you think it's a bit, I mean, and it's really great that he's got a team and he's put the behind him, but don't you think it's kind of unusual, because obviously Alan Judge's sort of career kind of reached a crossroads at Ipswich, shall we say, where he was obviously, you know, because of that, he was out for a couple of years. Do fans talk about that at all?
Not so much anymore. I think that all the last game up at Brentford when Higham played and Judge came back and they sort of came face to face, I think that was the end of that story, really. And I suppose there's, like we said, so much doom and gloom at Ipswich that to have a player now, all we want to see is him kind of roaming around and being the playmaker that we know he can be. So not so much, but I'm looking forward to seeing how, because I know he'll get a good reception on Wednesday night. It is part of the story, but I think now there's enough water under the bridge, don't you?
Hi, mate. It's this Dave here.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, mate. So this is, you know, being in the third tier of English football is something that's become alien to Ipswich Town fans. You've had an amazing run. It's been, you know, decades really, isn't it? Since you came out of the third tier and you had your amazing European success. Are you nervous about what could happen? You know, you could get, I mean, Sheffield United, they were trapped down there for best part of a decade really. So going down doesn't necessarily mean you're going to come back up. Are you equipped? Are you prepared? Have you got your infrastructure right? You know, you signed Alan Judge. He's got great experience at that level, but it's not going to be an easy fight to come straight back, is it?
No, I mean, yeah, we are obviously nervous. The worst case scenario is you're down and you stay down really. And I think the way it is now is that if you don't have parachute money, excuse me, or have had Premier League money in the last 5 years, and I mean, you guys, Sheffield United, Preston, people like that, even Leeds to a certain extent, all work wonders having never had that money. If you consistently don't have that, you drop down to a level below sort of half the Championship teams, and it's haves and have nots. And I mean, if you look at the Brentford model, you've done brilliantly at, I mean, you pay good wages, but you've done brilliantly at bringing through players and making up that shortfall by, you know, consistently signing good players and selling them on. We haven't found any way of making up that shortfall in the Evans years, and it's kind of been inevitable. But in some ways, the real hope is what actually happened at Sheffield United is, in the end, they cleaned the club out and got everyone in on League One contracts, on sensible wages, moved back up with a fresh start. And if that takes a couple of years to kind of clean the club out, get the fans back, get a winning mentality back, then we'll take that. But obviously, a lot of people are going to be looking at it and thinking they should come straight back if Evans, you know, spends near what he's been spending already.
Ben, it's Nick. You're here. You've had a couple of good results away from home, actually, since you lost to Reading, because you drew with West Brom and with Bristol City. Why is it that you play that much better away than you do at home?
I don't want to sound defeatist. We caught both of those teams at good times. We did catch West Brom right at the end of the Darren Moore thing, where the fans were a bit bewildered. And as you've seen with Bristol City, they kind of run out of steam after the international break. They are playing with freedom now. They're, you know, as good as down, and away from home is obviously a little bit easier. But, I mean, you guys are known for just creating so many chances at Griffin Park that if you gave me 1-1 now, I would shake hands with you and we'll just go to the pub and miss the game, I think.
You're not having it.
So there you have it. I mean, you've already sort of preempted my question. So big game tomorrow, just very briefly.
Wednesday.
I think it's tomorrow, but Wednesday, we got a big cup game tomorrow. But Wednesday, play Brentford. So what are you saying? Score prediction, and just quickly, in five words, how are Ipswich going to take us on?
Well, with great difficulty if you play like you normally play at Griffin Park. Hopefully we'll be open and play with freedom. I'm really looking forward to seeing Ben Rama. He's obviously on fire, and with my kind of balanced, non-biased hat on, looking forward to seeing him. But it's obviously going to be a long afternoon, a long evening. I don't want to come on here and be totally defeatist, but we're going to have to get a bit of luck to come away with anything, because I can see you guys creating your normal amount of chances. And maybe we defend well, and maybe a judge set play or a counter-attack or something of that nature might get us on the score sheet. You know,
going 1-0, Ben?
No chance.
No chance.
No, I think we may score, but I think you'll win probably quite handily.
Hope you're right.
Well, you're a popular man in the studio. Lovely to talk to you, Ben from Blue
Monday. I'm an honest man.
Podcast. There
Cheers,
you
Ben.
Are indeed. Cheers, Ben.
Cheers, Ben.
And of course, there is a cup final for Brentford before then.
That's right. It's a cup final. It's the London City Cup final. Wingate and Finchley, 7:45 Tuesday night. Go there. The bar's very nice. People are very nice. Brentford are playing Welling Town. I think it's Welling City. Welling, anyway. They're playing Welling. So get down there, go and support Welling. The Bees B team, and then you could just sort of leave, and then Wednesday you can get down to Griffin Park for us to play Ipswich, where I think we're going to win 3-0.
And you can also 4-1. Catch the podcast.
3-2.
3-2. Everyone's optimistic. It's wins, and you can catch the podcast live Thursday, 7 a.m, Pride of West.London. And we'll see you next week on the Brentford Fan Show.
Come on.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.